Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another gorgeous Thursday night in Southern California, and we're in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, and top of the 36-story building overlooking Notre Dame High School.
And because of the time change, we actually can see sunset.
We actually can see everything.
Everything.
Including the naked woman over there.
Where?
Flagging her shirt.
Where?
There isn't one, Bobby.
Next to the naked man.
Oh, where?
This is LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, your host, in studio tonight with Bobby Jean Bell, the nicest lady in the world. Told you, I'm running out of adjectives.
Oh, gosh.
Bobby, sadly, will not be with us next week.
But you got Russ with you.
But I have Russ with me next week. Oh, my gosh. That's like, it's going to be a crazy time.
It will.
Okay. Did you say you were doing number two or number one?
I'm doing, I'll be reading the second ad.
Okay. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing, the nice folks at Black Dog in Simi Valley. If you're a new writer and one that has really not any idea of where to go with what they've done, give us a call. We can help you with that. We can do proofreading, editing, and help you with your printing and talking to agents and publishers if you want. And that number is 805-795-3165. And by Out West, and take it away, Bobby.
Out West is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinct apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and more. Just check us out at www.scvoutwest.com and use code WB100 to get $10 off your order. And then do you want to tell us a little bit about Target Freight?
I will. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload. That's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM also provides unmatched customer support from their dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline their customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today at 844-653-7789. And the guy you want to talk to is Mike Matruski. Tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you.
And if you are an LTL shipper, we know you are looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. For both truckload and LTL, call today. You won't be disappointed.
Nope. And if you want to call and talk to our guest tonight, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And Henry just hung up. Henry, call back.
Oh, gosh.
Call back, and we'll get you on for your Henry's Western.
So while we're waiting for Henry to call us back, can I ask you the question we asked our guest last week?
Sure.
What's your dream car?
What is my dream car?
Yes, what is your dream
car? Actually, I used to own my dream car, a 73 Datsun 240Z.
And
I love that car.
Will you have one again in your future?
Probably
then?
Not. Okay, we have Mr. Park on the line. Let's get Henry's Western Roundup segment in the works. Henry, good morning or afternoon. Evening.
Or evening, whatever it is.
Depending on time.
Hi, Henry.
Hi, Henry.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. What do you got for us tonight?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been having a wonderful time working on articles for True West and for the Roundup. I just interviewed Western actors Bruce Boxleitner and Earl Holliman and Andrew Prine back to back to back. Did you ever see Earl's and Andrew's series, The Wide Country?
Oh, yeah, years and years and years ago. They were rodeo riders, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like Route 66, with rodeo background.
Yeah.
And I've been watching a lot of it lately. The technical director on the show was the great rodeo clown turned actor Slim Pickens.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my.
And boy, you can tell he knew his stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, been nailed by a few bulls.
Oh, yes, quite a few. Well, now, you know, one of the great frustrations for Western fans is that over the past few years, some of the very best Westerns that have come out have been low-budget independents, and they can be extremely hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there's a new online service, at least it's new to me, I think it's new, that's featuring some of the very best, very entertaining films like Western Religion, Good for Nothing, and Dark Frontier for free. And it's all legit. It's not like, you know, people just bootlegging up their copies. And I'll be telling you all about how to track those down. I'll be reviewing some new releases from Alpha Video. Have you ever seen Bert Lahr, The Wizard of Oz's Cowardly Lion, in a Western?
No. Did that really happen?
He did this one short. It's called No More West. And it's one of a very funny series of early talkie pre-code shorts from Alpha. You know, a few months back, I took part as an announcer in a series of old-time radio reenactments, which was great fun and a big success because people actually showed up. One of the shows, a Lone Ranger episode, was videotaped, and I'm putting that up on the roundup because I know a lot of people have not seen how these things are done. And if you're a fan of dramatic radio or the Lone Ranger,
right,
and you'd like to see how it's done with a full cast, live sound effects,
right,
it's a lot of fun.
You get to watch the Foley
artists. I think years and years and years ago in Jack Benny's TV show, they had a segment mm-hmm. where they were doing their radio show on TV, which was pretty good, actually. Yeah. But I don't know how authentic it was, but it was there. I'm just saying.
It was probably authentic with some extra jokes. But,
oh, I'm sure.
You know, he was... Yeah, the old Jack Benny and the old Burns and Allen show were just groundbreakingly weird because they just did that. There were no rules yet about what TV should look like, and they just did anything they felt like. It was great stuff.
Right, right.
Well, now there are two big, great big events coming in April, and I know all of us are going to be taking part in the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I'll be there talking to three of the most talented folks writing Western novels today at the Buckaroo Bookshop.
Me and who else?
You and, excuse me, did I say three when I meant four? Well, I'll be officially chatting. You just chat. But I'll also be chatting in front of people with Dale D.B. Jackson
right.
and Eric Heisner all about the screenwriting process.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be talking with C. Courtney Joyner, author of the hugely popular Shotgun book series,
right,
about some truly weird Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And the other event in April is the Turner Classic Movies Festival in Hollywood. Have you ever attended any of that?
No.
They just get, you know, everything is 35mm prints, everything is real film, everything is introduced by someone interesting. There are a lot of great movies, as always, but unfortunately, dang few Westerns. The focus this year is on comedy, and Mel Brooks will be there, but showing High Anxiety, not Blazing Saddles, mm-hmm. which he presented there like 2 years ago. But they just announced today that Dick Cavett will be there to present The Marx Brothers in Go West.
Oh, wow.
Which I don't think has been shown on a screen since the 40s.
Oh, God,
wow.
No.
Wow.
Very cool.
And, well, now, on a serious note, of course, we all lost a good friend and a very talented writer a couple of weeks ago, Stephen Lodge.
I know.
And
yes.
I'm going to be rerunning my interview with Steve, where he talked all about his remarkable life growing up on the sets of Republic Westerns,
mm-hmm.
working as a gunfighter at Crash Corrigan's Corriganville,
mm-hmm.
his work in wardrobe on Westerns, his screenwriting career. He wrote Willie Nelson's best Western, and the best movie ever made about rodeo and the honkers.
Good movie.
Yeah.
And please check out the March True West and my article on the return for season 2 of Underground, which just started a couple of weeks ago.
Just started.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, I'm sorry?
Yeah, it just started again.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even seen the new ones yet, but the first season I thought was terrific. And you know what? You can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Wow. Good job, Henry. Good job, Henry, here.
Oh, finally, what I've earned. Thank you.
You got the clap, Henry. Thanks, pal. We'll talk
Thank
to you in a
you
couple
guys.
Weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye, Henry.
Bye-bye. Good night.
You know, Stephen Lodge was with us 2 years ago at the Buckaroo Bookshop.
Yes.
2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
Was so happy to have gotten to meet him.
He was a very nice man.
Very nice. Yeah.
Tonight's guest we have in the studio tonight with us is is quite a gentleman. He's I told him I was going to bust him on this, and I actually am going to bust him on this right as we speak. The man gives us a book that's 377 pages long. He gives me a bio that's about three quarters of a paragraph. And this is his bio. Short bio. Retired detective from the Los Angeles Police Department. Last assignment, Major Narcotics Section. Since retirement, the LAPD, I own and manage the Michael Agency, a global investigative firm that provides services to the entertainment industry and corporations. Full stop. That's it. That's his bio.
Because the book says it all.
Now, we know where he's from. He's from Iowa.
Iowa.
Spent time in the military. And spent time with the LAPD. And welcome to the Writer's Block.
Thank you.
Mr. Jack Struble.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome, Jack. I have to say that I finished your book, I think I told you yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Quite a read. It's quite
it
a read.
It is another adventure.
Get close to your microphone.
It is another adventure ride. You start us off, and oh my gosh!
And you don't let go until the last couple pages.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
It's great.
It's a lot. It's very interesting and quite educational.
Yeah.
If you don't know LAPD procedure.
Well, if all that you know is from watching TV programs
Adam
like
12,
Major Crimes and Blue Bloods and whatever,
Net.
You know, yeah, it's so interesting to really get the whole procedure, you know, what really goes on.
Right. No one once said in that book that just the facts, ma'am.
You know, when I wrote, I've read a lot of those types of books over the years, and The thing was, when I read them, they always kind of left me wondering what they were talking about. There's always code. There's always some slang. And fortunately, because I was a cop, I mean, I understood some of it, but a lot of it has to do with regional, like New York or Miami or Chicago or whatever. And when I wrote my book, I started writing this. Before I wrote it, I said, you know what? I'm going to write it. When I come to some, I'm going to explain it. Because what I want to do is kind of take people on a journey so that when they read something and then we talk about the Academy, I want them to really know what the Academy was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And as I explained, I was trying to give them a little bit of a history lesson. You know, I spent my whole law enforcement career, you know, in Los Angeles, a place I truly loved, LAPD. And there, you know, other than some of the bad press it gets, I thought, you know what, kind of take them through a journey and kind of show them really what it's all about. But at the same time, show them what really goes on.
So the book we're talking about, because I'm not sure we said the title, is Major...
We did not. We did
Major,
not.
Major Violators, and it came out Los Angeles, and it came out August of last year.
Yes. Yeah.
And we said that you take us on a ride, and we go through intersections, and we go through on streets, and whether you live here or you live on an outskirt, a suburb of L.A., or you're from another part of the country, some of these places you'll know the name.
San Ysidro.
Yeah, and...
Not Centralia.
It takes us to...
Down in the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Griffith Park, and, you know, all around.
On a two-day surveillance.
So you feel like, no matter where you are as a reader, that you are firmly planted here on these streets and in this landscape. Tell us a little bit. You've already done that a little bit by your background, but kind of who are the Major Violators? Where does that title come from?
I spent 17 years in a unit on the police department called the Major Violators Section. And what our function was, we were part of the narcotics division at LAPD. And we investigated large-scale narcotics cases. I mean, our cases took us all over the United States, all over the world for that matter. Uh-huh. And back in, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s, when in L.A., when the drug trafficking was going on, major violator section was deep into it. I mean, the Tijuana cartel, now the big things, the Sinaloa cartel. But there is literally, there's a real live breathing division or section at LAPD called Major Violator Section. So what I did was, first of all, I always liked the name. When I went up there, I thought, what a cool name.
It's a cool name. You know? Are you a major violator?
Are you a major violator, right? And so, you know, and Major Violator Section's been around, you know, they've been around for almost 50 years. And what the name entails is basically, you know, there's criminals and then there's major violators. These are bad, bad people. These are not just people that do harmful things, murder, rape, robbery. I mean, these are people that are trafficking large quantities of cocaine across our borders into LA, which is, you know, everybody knows it's, you know, we're so close to the border. Mm-hmm. And these are like the really, really bad people that the police face. Now, you know, a lot of the cops and, you know, the patrol guys, I mean, it's a tough job in this city. But people that are, like, working are really into this up to their nose, just barely breathing. I mean, you know, every day you're dealing with people that, when you go out there and you're following them and you're investigating them, I mean, they're creating mayhem all mm-hmm. over the world. Mm-hmm. And they're not only just here in L.A., but then, you know, they're fleeing and they're in New York and they're in Miami.
Yeah, their tentacles are everywhere.
Everywhere. And so this is really what it's all about. This is, you know, it's the major violators that we, as a unit, investigated. And that's
well, we don't want to do a spoiler alert.
I know.
So
I know.
We're trying very hard to kind of ask questions around the storyline because the storyline is really good.
It's really good.
It is really good. Let's talk a little bit about character development, because there are some interesting characters in this book.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's going to give anybody a major push on the book. So your main protagonist. His father is killed.
Yes.
Years and years, 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
And his name is?
Justin Bertram.
Mm-hmm. Justin Bertram. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the head guys in the squad.
Yes.
And then your other characters, I assume, and as we had spoken earlier in the green room, they're a kind of a meld of other people that you have known throughout your career at the LAPD.
That are in the unit.
Yes.
Yep.
And they each have their own thing to offer, and it's quite interesting to see what they actually can do and are willing to do.
This is an amazing team.
It is truly an amazing team, and amazingly enough, they're just like spot on honest.
Yep.
Well, you know, when you get a unit like that, I mean, you have it's not hard. It's, you know, to say, well, we have one alpha and a whole lot of Bravos, a lot of B-type personalities. In a unit like this, which, like I said, exists, everybody's an A-type personality.
Sure.
Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah.
And, excuse me, but the cool thing about it, and this is the honest-to-God truth, the cool thing about it is when somebody's a case agent, you saw this in the book, everybody jumps in. There's no egos involved, mm-hmm. no egos whatsoever. And the bottom line is they're given the worst cases possible, and everybody just comes together, and there's got to be somebody kind of steering the ship, so to speak. And, you know, but somebody has to run the case, you know,
the case
agent. And, but, yeah, it's that's kind of the way they all are. Like I said, you know, there's a lieutenant, six detectives, and they're all type A's. And most people would say, how the heck they get all along?
When you each have a different skill.
Yeah, they each have a different skill.
You know, I suppose it would be a lot easier to get along.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Each brings something different to the table.
Well, sure, especially when nobody knows that, you know, that everybody knows that nobody's going to be the boss.
Yeah, exactly.
You're the boss today, you're the boss tomorrow, you're the boss.
Yeah. And then there's the boss.
The and then the big boss sits in his office and goes, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
What kind of crap is this?
Exactly.
Yeah, and they run together. I mean, that's an interesting group that they they meld together on a variety of different levels, and they all have their own lives, but they operate like a unit.
Right. Yeah, I had a strong vision of course, your protagonist is married. But I had a vision of most everyone else was either divorced or scared to be in a relationship.
Yes. He has a wonderful relationship with his family.
He has a wonderful relationship with his family.
As did his dad. Yeah.
But it's a great story, and I applaud you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I don't often do.
And
that.
Are there more coming? It would seem like this unit. Okay.
Are they the same characters?
Same character.
This unit will.
Yes.
This unit's moving forward. Doing some more good deeds.
What made you decide? That's kind of Armenian English.
That's kind of the way I write, and then I go back and do spell check, and it comes up with something that says, "Hey, stupid."
What made you decide? Well, I'm trying to do grammar 101 now.
Send your comments to Jim Christina.
Yeah, send your comments to Jim Christina. Grammar Plus. To sit down and write this story, because I got a feeling that a lot of it actually happened.
A lot of it did happen.
Yeah.
And it's little pieces of things over 25 years that happened. And, you know, what happened was I wrote a screenplay.
Right.
And then I took the screenplay, and I kind of did it in reverse because most people write a book and write a screenplay. But I wrote a screenplay, and then I turned around and I kind of used it as a little bit of a guideline. Mm-hmm. And as you know, like in a screenplay, depending if it's for TV or for movies, you got anywhere between 45 and 60 pages for TV and, you know,
120 pages for a movie.
So the whole goal was to, you know, to try to get it made as, you know, a TV show. And so what I did is I kind of used it as a guideline. And then I kind of, from there, it just kind of...
Well, that's kind of like a perfect outline.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Because so much of what we don't get to see in a movie or a TV are all of the things you hit on procedurally.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You might just hear, you know, you're watching NCIS or something, and we got to do our reports. And you don't really know what does
right.
that mean. You
right,
know?
Right, right.
But you go into, without boring us, so you stop when it's too much detail, but we learn that there's, you know, lots of information that has to get recorded and detailed, and photos, and how this is all done to me was so interesting. So you take us on like a ride, we can barely catch our breath, and then we go do the reports, and it's kind of like, okay,
but
now I'm learning what happens, you know, after that, and now we're on a ride again,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And oh, we're going to this archive to look for lost photographs, so that's really, oh, we're going to Carmine's for something. Oh, we're on a ride again.
but then he stops and he gives us history.
Yeah, and he gives us which I found so interesting.
It's right in the middle of the thought process, which is perfect because you're wondering what is it? Oh, here it comes, and then you find out what it is. You even mentioned the old city jail.
Oh, yeah.
Down under Parker Center. My uncle used to be a jailer down there.
Jim has been connected to every guest we've had.
I know. Only six degrees of separation.
Some kind of way. He's either lived where they lived, or he went to school where the wife went, or you always have some amazing connection.
The old jail is under Parker Center. There might be another book,
you know, in this about Jim's guest connections.
It's 6 degrees of separation.
You know, Kevin Bacon was fortunate enough to have one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what the heck? You know, I'm gonna, as old as I am, and as often as I've traveled and places I've gone and people I've met.
Yeah,
you can't help it.
It actually is so interesting how you connect to so many people,
like,
so many different ways.
Like Jerry, like Jerry's ex-husband was in the Bank of America shootout, as I said. Her and a friend of ours named Tim. Tim Olson.
So there's a connection there because my writing partner Chick Daniel, you know, he was in SWAT.
Uh huh.
And he's still very connected to those people, and they were there. I mean, of course, they ended all that.
Uh-huh.
And it's really interesting because, you know, when you're around the department, there's all these different personalities, and there's these, you know, this time on the job kind of thing, and you have these conversations with these guys, and it's all a matter of fact.
Sure.
You know, it's like, well, I remember, you know, kid back in the 65 riots. We're like, oh, yeah, okay. You
know, I remember that, too.
I remember this, and I remember that, you know. So,
but, I remember going by to watch the war.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch burn down.
But, you know, I think you mentioned how it's kind of a ride. The truth of the matter is where I worked, that's kind of like what our day went like sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And when I started writing this, I what I wanted to do was kind of give people an inside view of what really goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like we talked about before we started, you know, you're sitting there and nothing's happening. The next thing you know, a phone's ringing. The next thing you know, you're down by the Mexican border,
mm-hmm.
following some bad guy. And that's what happened to our day. That's the way our days went a lot of times. You know, we'd be in, like I said, we'd be in the office or we'd be going to work, and then something happened and everything just busted loose. So what I did was I just wanted to kind of take people on that ride. And even my wife, you know, she didn't have a clue. I mean, she knew what I did, but I didn't tell her everything, obviously. But she's like, you know, is this what happened when you're in the job? She goes, I knew you would leave at 7 and come home at 11 or 12 at night sometimes. I said, well, that's just the way it went.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the way things happen.
It's the job.
It's the job. Well, and the other thing that was interesting to me, too, is how technology... And you were, when we were chatting before, you talked about the old days and heavy laptops and floppy disks, you know, trying to create the warrant.
Yes.
And again, we don't see those kinds of things on, you know, TV or all. And in the book, they're working with a piece of technology that pings. And there's a
Kingfish.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
it's like I'd never, you know. Of course,
I'd never
heard of that. And there was other technology that the common man probably doesn't really know that you make some reference to. How is that with writing and trying to keep up with? Since you're not with the LAPD right now, mm-hmm. as you're moving forward, I would imagine big changes happen with technology.
Oh. Continue to happen,
exactly.
Probably.
So, how is that a challenge as a writer? For how do you keep up to date with what's, you know, currently being used?
I think, you know, I still have friends on the job, and I'm not as entrenched in it as I was when I was on the job, but I stay current. I talk to friends. A good friend of mine, Craig Lally, is the president of the union, the police union, and I have a good friend of mine, Joe Callion. We were partners together in homicide. I mean, he's still on the job, and my screenwriting, my partner Chick Daniel. I mean, he's totally connected to these people. So, you know, we're constantly talking about things. And you just, you know, things come up in conversation. Mm-hmm. And if I was to write from like a 5 year ago perspective, it would be, you know, like a period piece. It'd be like some from Downton Abbey, so to speak. But, hey, don't get me wrong. My wife loves that show.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's a good show. But 25 years, but just what you talked about before.
Yeah. It'd be beepers instead of cell phones.
You know, yeah,
well,
beepers.
Yeah, we have those, too.
You talked about it when we were talking in the green room, finding a guy in a payphone.
Well, absolutely.
It's like how many payphones are there? Like, kids probably don't even know what a payphone is.
Exactly.
You know, anymore.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is when I was in major narcotics, I mean, we'd see something like that where a guy would pull up and he's driving around the parking lot and he's backing his truck in and he's looking at his pager and he's talking on his cell phone and then he goes to a payphone and he's this and you know where I was, we'd call that guy a player.
Yeah, you just knew
and
from the behaviors.
We knew by his behaviors, and if there, I lost track of the times that we would be sitting there and we'd see somebody move, and the next thing you know, we're like seizing 200 kilos of cocaine later. I mean, it just happens all the time, you know. And I occasionally go to some of the retirements. Friends of mine retire, and I go and I talk to the guys that are on the job now. And you know, we're just like, you know, I said, well, they look at me like I'm ancient, you know. and I said, well, you know, I remember when I had a bag phone. And they go, what? And I said, never mind. I said, you know, and the first, you know, we used to have the brick phone. They go, the what?
Can and a string.
Yeah, can and a string. You know, but
telegraph.
But, you know, I mean, that's the technology. I mean, 5 years, I mean, you know, we could be with the brick phone, and now we're with a little small.
Well, and now there's drones, and I don't know what, you know, all kinds of things.
There's a show on TNT called Major Crimes. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's a cute show.
Yes.
But they had one segment where they said, well, this person made this phone call to a phone booth downtown, and somebody stops and he goes, wait a minute. There's still phone booths in L.A.?
I don't know.
And that's what everybody said.
You know, I don't know. That's news to me. You know, maybe there is
something. Superman has to go somewhere.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You know, if we didn't have a phone booth, what would Superman do?
Exactly.
Well, now they're all open, so what would he do anyway?
Yeah, well, he'd just have to shrink.
See Superman's skivvies.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Did you ever get a writer's block in this show? I'm just going to jump right into
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
That's the name of the show, is a writer's block. So did you ever get a writer's block while writing this book?
I have to be honest with you, I didn't. When I started writing, I used my script as a guideline, and I kind of filled things in when I was taking notes. And once I did, it just started coming. And I just started taking little pieces of things. And, you know, you have to make it entertaining. You
sure.
You don't want to make it completely so procedural because people are snoring. But
not in this book.
Yeah,
no.
But, you know,
nobody's
like
snoring
said,
in this
like
book.
Like I said, the things in the book, the things that happened were things that not necessarily happened to me, but I knew about them. I was aware of them. I was around them. And so I used them. I mean, I kind of stole their idea, but the bottom line is, it wasn't their idea. They got kind of pushed into it. And I kind of took it and kind of said, okay, instead of using this whole incident, I'm just going to use a portion of it. And I started it, and 2.5 months later, I was done.
Mm-hmm. But now you're into another book.
Mm-hmm. How is that one?
Now, you're not using a guideline.
No, and I outline, and what I did was I outlined it, and since I did the last, since I wrote the last one, my writing partner Chick Daniel and I have been kind of pushing to try to, we've been going around town trying to see what we can do about getting someone to option it for us, and you know, as a TV show, and so we've been spent a lot of time with that, but I came up, you know, the next one is a little darker. I have to admit, it's a little darker. It's not going to scare anybody away, but there's just because of circumstances, a little bit more going on. So I wanted to make sure I layered it correctly so it didn't sound boring and just, you know, weird. And, you know, I still try to take everybody on a little bit of a ride, and I explain some things. And, you know, yeah, we have all the same players, the same, you know, got people in the unit, the same lieutenant. But, you know, at times, this time you kind of, sometimes I sit there and instead of writing maybe 30 pages, sometimes I'll sit there and maybe write 10. But then what I'm hoping is, and I think what it is, I've had some great feedback from people. And I want to make sure that the next book, when it comes out, I want to make sure that I don't disappoint people. You know, I want them to at least say, hey, it was entertaining, is the last one. So.
Well, if nothing else, it is entertaining.
Well, and it feels, this book feels like it just flew out of his pen. Like it just, just seamless. And things, you know, we start out with, it's not a spoiler alert because it happens right in the beginning of the book, but we start out with a pretty brutal bank robbery.
Right.
And we got these guys in suits. So cute. The black
brown
suit,
right? Black suit, blue
and,
suit.
You know, and we begin to meet the characters from the unit, and we start to learn a little bit of their back history, knowing that eventually these groups are going to come together. We don't really know that Justin's, Bertram's, the story about his dad having lost his dad 30 years or so before, how that incident is actually going to be a major piece to this puzzle. And that's one of the things I love about great writing. Charles Dickens was wonderful at it. Little details that you didn't think were important on page 4 become major players on page 300, and you go like, oh my gosh, he tied that in. You
I
know?
Remember that, yeah.
And I guess that's one of the things I like about writing is how the details from early on that maybe you missed actually all have a consequence,
right,
or have a bigger meaning later on. And it felt like this book, it just was seamless that way. Like things that were in the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of go like, okay, I think I need to remember mm-hmm. that because this is going to be like important later.
I will tell you that the guy that you think is the bad guy, you have not met yet.
I was telling Jim, truly, this is, I think, the only one other book in all of our shows that I was not able to finish, but I had read enough of to really, you know what's going on.
Right.
And I didn't want him to tell me. I want to finish because I have these ideas, and I kind of really want to know, like, oh, it's not him. Okay, so who is it?
You know? Well, you have 3 weeks now.
I know, because I won't be on until...
Right,
told,
said yeah. you can finish his book.
You know, it's funny. Like, when I wrote, I wanted to tell a good story, but I knew that people that I worked with, I mean, I've had people that I haven't talked to in years come out and they go, damn good job. And I go, well, thank you very much. And they go, hey, you know, I got to go. I said, you've always had to go. And, you know, and like my friend Steve Heimer, you know, Steve's...
No, that would be your friend that is sitting in the studio right here.
Smiling and nodding his head.
Smiling and nodding his head.
My husband
and
Jim that
you know,
are here.
Steve
but
is
right.
an avid reader. He reads his genre.
And he's
all
wearing
the time.
Really cool cowboy boots, by the way.
Yes, he is. And I was going to wear mine.
Square toed, too.
But, you know, one thing I can appreciate, as Steve is my friend, is, you know, when it comes to certain things, Steve pulls no punches. Mm-hmm. And I was at this, I was with my son, and we were, we were at the Ammo Brothers. You heard, you know, Ammo Brothers, the gun store?
Oh, yeah.
They got all these little gadgets in there. And so I was talking to Steve, and he goes, man, I just want to let you know, this and this and this and this. And I was like, thanks, Steve. Because, I mean, it was real positive. And I said, well, did you do anything in there that you didn't? He goes, no. He goes, this is the way I think you write, like this person and this person. I liked it. And he was real, his critique was like, you know, when I go to give a critique, I have to rewrite it. And Steve's like, and I said, how the hell do you do that, Steve? Because I can't do that. I'm like agonizing and rewriting and make sure it is a IT and I don't put a TI accidentally or something, you know. But, I mean, it's, you know, I wrote it for people like Steve because, you know, he reads that genre. And I wrote it, you know, and when some of the people I worked with, I want them to at least come back and at least say
right.
it was accurate.
And, you know, and we know that too with, well, many genres, but Western, your genre is people who know it. You know, a Peter Schirico, if he's reading or watching, boy, it's got it. That saddle's got to be right, and the descriptions have to be right. The people that like that genre very often are really aficionados in
right.
that genre,
right.
and it'll drive them crazy. Where I can watch a film and have no idea that that's not the way to properly get on a horse,
right.
and I'm really looking at a bigger picture kind of thing. But to those that really know, that will drive them crazy,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So being authentic and, but I think not laboring over it because I think when you get too detail to be sure that it really reads correctly can put off other people,
mm-hmm.
but that the sense of it is proper and correct, then that helps that
right.
that reader of that genre just
right.
keep reading on.
Right. Right.
They well, know that you know what you're talking about.
I think you're always going to have to push the envelope out a little bit because of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stories aren't always in a 4x4 box. They're, you know, they
exactly.
they spread.
Right.
And so, I mean, even if you're a really aficionado of the genre, when you're reading fiction, that comes into play and you're going, okay, I can believe
yeah,
this.
Yeah, because I'm caught up in it.
It probably didn't happen.
I'm caught up in it.
But I could believe it happened.
I'm caught up in it. I want to know what's on the next page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to Jack.
Do you want to ask another process question?
I can.
Okay.
When you were writing this, what did you have a particular type of day that you'd like to sit down and write? Like in the evening with a glass of scotch or in the morning with a Diet Coke?
I'm an early morning person, and I'm up before everybody. And I'm sitting there typing away with my
40-pound laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
Floppy disk.
But, you know, I like getting up early. And I, you know, get the coffee made, and I sit down, and I'm right into it. Nighttime, I'm like, I'm like going, did I write that? Sometimes what I'll do is, I've learned is I won't go back at night if I'm self-editing. You know, every writer is, everybody's self-editing. They're constantly going, no. I can shorten that sentence and make it sound better by using less words or using the right words.
Right.
And, and not make it sound like, like some books, when they do it, they sound like Shakespeare when they're, and it's like, where did that guy come up with that word?
Yeah.
But what I do is I get up in the morning early. I start writing like maybe 5:30, 6:00. And I'll write for maybe 3 or 4 hours, and then I kind of put it away, and then I'll go through and I'll edit it, and then I'll think, okay, I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much will stick to my outline, and there's sometimes I've switched some things around because it didn't really make sense,
mm-hmm.
and at times, things would get like a little, busy,
because mm-hmm.
there's a lot of things going on,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time you kind of want to explain it where it's
when it gets that busy you almost have to explain it.
You have to slow it down a bit, take a deep breath and do it. So
have you always written this is your first book, but were you always kind of writing?
Always
did you keep journals or short stories, or were you just what kinds of things were you, have you been writing?
When I was on the job, I had a mentor of mine, a guy by the name of Juan Villanueva, and I knew how to write search warrants, but when I went to, that's where,
There's some fiction for you.
Yeah. Try to get the judge to buy off. I think the statute of limitations are up. But anyway, no, I'm just kidding. But, I really got into writing. I mean, when I was on the department and I went to, when I went to narcotics, I had a guy I worked with, a guy named Juan Villanueva. I think what it is, too, is you kind of have to have your mind open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just not, when people say a mentor, a teacher, everyone's thinking, oh, it's Grandpa Jones.
Oh, yeah, no.
But it could be somebody that's like,
absolutely,
20 years younger.
Sure.
Or 20 years older. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what do they have to offer? Mm-hmm. And, Juan was like that with me. And he was a San Pedro boy. He came from San Pedro. And he just had this way about him that was just like, he was like a Medal of Valor winner, and he was just had this calming way about him in a way of teaching. And he would say to me, he'd say, well, mijo, he goes, here's what you need to do, and this is why you need to do it, and this will do this, and the judge is this, and I'm saying, and he would say, we're writing warrants for people that don't know what the hell we're doing, so we have to explain it to them.
Uh-huh.
And I go, you're right. And so that's where I kind of fell in love with it. And it just, it just kind of developed. And I started writing journals to my son.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I told you earlier, people kept saying, oh, Jack, you need to write.
Mm-hmm.
I says, oh, get lost. And then finally, just one day, my wife said it to me for about the 900th time. And I was someplace in the East Coast, and all of a sudden someone said something to me. And I said, I think I will. And I started writing, and I said, hey, this ain't half bad.
Yeah.
This ain't half bad. So.
What a great, it's great.
Half bad is good.
Right? It's really great.
If it's not half bad, then it's good.
Who are you reading right now? Are you an avid reader?
I wish I was.
Yeah. Okay. That's
not really, yeah. No.
Is there anybody you particularly enjoy, though?
Andrew Peterson. I like Clancy.
Mm-hmm.
I find it hard to get through a Tom Clancy book, but I do like his writing.
He's very technical.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very technical. He's
extremely technical.
So you kind of go like, oh my gosh, they have those kinds of things out there?
It's like Jean Le Carré.
Yeah.
Try to get through one of those books.
Yeah.
And Robert Ludlum's another one.
Robert Ludlum.
Steve let us just know that's you. And do you like to read paper, or are you an electronic reader?
Oh, I'm a paper guy.
Paper guy.
Good man.
Yeah. Paper guy. Yeah. I love the paper.
Good man.
I I love the paper, but my wife is an avid reader, and you know she'll read things, you know, electronically, but I mean she loves books, and I've always loved them, and it's just kind of, I mean, it's nice to open it up. It's nice to touch the pages.
Yep.
I like bending the ears where people are like, you know, that's like a sin with most people.
Oh, my wife says, did you do that?
the little floppy ears.
You know, and I partly like, I was thinking just the other day, because we've asked this question before, but another thing that I like about the written word in a bound copy is I kind of have some idea where I'm at.
Yes.
Where even if I'm electronic and it says you're on page 93 of 195, I still kind of like to, we're about halfway.
Right.
I got, like, how many more, like, I'm three quarters, you know, I don't know. There's something about being able to see where you are.
All right. Do you write 5 days a week, 7 days a week, 3 days a week when you feel like it?
I write 4 to 5 days a week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
One on the same project, or do you have different storylines?
That was going to be my next question.
No,
that's okay. That's okay, because now we're on the same page. Yeah, are you working in more than one thing at a time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh.
Most of us are.
Yes. And I have to remember which one I'm working on.
I wondered.
Isn't that horrid?
You got to shift gears, because the next thing you know, you're writing, you're looking, you said, that doesn't even pertain to that.
Wait a minute. A 2014 Camaro does not have a saddle.
Or that's like being in more than one play at a time and walking on stage and saying dialogue that's
from the other play.
Looking around and going, wait a minute, what happened here?
you got to keep it all straight. That's what the outline and the notes are good for.
I got to tell you, I can hardly wait to get to your other book.
Well,
so
thank you.
Do you have an agent?
No, I don't have an agent.
And your publisher is
Mascot.
Yes.
And how did you hook up with your publisher?
I met him at an event, and one thing led to another, and he says, I think you got a story there.
Uh-huh.
And I said, maybe. So I sent him a writing sample, and he read it. And I actually sent him the script. And so what I did was, being the smart writer, I watermarked every page 14 times. And I said, don't do that. No. So he said, no, there's a story here. I said, yeah, there is. And
so it was in the script form. It was from your initial script form.
And that, you know, writing scripts are, you know, that's so.
I've never written one.
No, I don't know.
Oh, actually, I did write one.
I know what it is to read them, and I know what it is to act them, but I don't know.
I did write one.
It's a
two-act play.
It's a whole different process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you only have so many pages to get what you need to get.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go on for 10 pages to explain it. You have to get it maybe in a paragraph.
Well, you want to give us your contact information? Because we're running out of time here.
You can go to my website at www.majorviolators.com.
Okay.
And there's a way to contact me on there. Or you can, I would give you my cell, but every crap.
No, we don't want
no,
your
we
phone
don't want
number.
Your cell.
I'm just kidding.
No, because.
Write that number down, Jim.
Because the drug dealers you busted will want to be looking for you.
Just go to my website, and there's a place there to contact me, and then send me something if you have any questions.
Facebook page? It's Jack Struble, author.
Yes, and he has a Facebook page. He doesn't
post to it very often.
Doesn't do a lot there yet.
You did throw on our stuff from the Writer's Block page, though. I do have to commend
you.
And
I did
that.
Ask you to be a friend so I could post over there.
Yeah, I did too today, actually.
And he's probably going, who are these people?
Yeah, why do they want to be my friend?
I don't even know these people.
Are they my friends? Or?
After this, you're not going to want to be our friend either. So. The book is Major Violators. It's written by Jack Struble, who we have been fortunate enough to have in the studio tonight.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it fun to have a guest in the studio?
I love
live.
Having people in the studio.
So much fun.
And thanks for driving up from Orange.
Yeah. You bet.
And being here with us tonight. It's just been great having you, Jack.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And we have, of course, the Cowboy Festival coming up, the 22nd and 23rd of April.
Mm-hmm.
You will not be here next week.
I will not be here.
Or
and,
the week
and
after.
And now I just discovered I will not be with you on the 30th.
So
either.
I will have Russ next week, and I will talk to Richard and see if he can come in and join us.
Yeah.
Richard Polinelli, who is one of our authors, one of our favorite people in the studio. And next week, That's the one that everybody, this is one you have to listen to,
Jack.
Yeah,
that sounds like it's going to be so
great. Her name is Amanda Matty. She is a Navy veteran and an NSA veteran.
Ooh.
And she has written a book called A Foreign Affair.
Uh-huh.
And this will be the third week in a row I've got to read a book that's over 300 pages.
Well, and I am reading that. And thank you, Jerry, Christina, for sending it to me, even though I won't be on the show next week, because I will want to read that.
Yes.
For sure.
And the bookie, who you were getting the emails from, that's my wife, Jerry.
Oh, awesome.
So we keep it in the family.
Good deal.
She actually is, she's the booker and the producer. She's everything with
this
show.
Couldn't do it without her.
We could not do this show without her. That is a fact. So again, Jack, thank you for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me.
And this has been another Thursday and another Writer's Block, and it's in the can. And we will look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks for joining us. This is the Writer's Block. We're out of here.